Hello and welcome back to Ayers on the Road.
We're kind of welcoming ourselves back too, because we've been doing a little traveling and a little holidaying,
We are into the
and
season.
had to run a rerun one week because we were on a plane, and we're glad to be back.
We've been in Morocco. What a country! Wow, it's amazing. Africa.
Well, there's that song about faraway places with strange sounding names.
Yeah, I
I
do.
think that was written about Morocco, because think of the names of the city. You got Marrakesh, you got Casablanca, you got
Fez.
Tangier, you got
Fez.
Fez.
In Marrakesh is the proper pronunciation.
What did I say?
We
Oh, I like Marrakesh.
people laugh at him when they call them that. But anyway, we've had a fabulous time with our oldest daughter and her husband who've been there before. Oh my goodness, they showed us a fabulous
Well, that's the way to travel. Have somebody that's been there before pick you up and
somebody else who
drive
can
you, put in the
drive through that
airport and
craziness.
drive you through those crazy roads and through these little alleys in the sikh in the souks, where you only have a half an inch on each side of
Oh
your
my
car.
goodness, he was a great driver. We had a motorcycle guy who had to get us out of a pinch once and lead us to where we were really going. We were in an alley where a car had never been before, I think.
But it is a remarkable. This is country number 107 for me, Linda. What are you on
I
your
think
count?
you're counting Alaska as a separate country. I do think you're really fudging on that, but you have been to a lot.
I didn't try to do it. I got an invitation from a thing called the Century Club for people that have been to more than 100 countries, and I checked off all the little boxes. And they were a little liberal because they counted Alaska as a separate country. But
But
it was, I mean, Morocco was on kind of on our bucket list because we'd never ever been there. And it kind of helped me because Linda and I have this constant argument where I'm like, hey, we need to go back to the places we love the most. That's where we should be going. And Linda's like, no, because for every one of those we go back to, and we'll miss one we haven't been to.
that's exactly right. But I love being immersed again in the Muslim world. We have done Muslim world a lot, and it's so amazing. They're such an incredible culture.
Oh, well, you get five calls to prayer every day.
No matter where you are, and you're in the souks, which are the little markets, huge markets, they have loudspeakers everywhere that start 5 times a day, exactly on time, exactly the same words, call to prayer. Call to pray to Allah. And not all the merchants can stop, but we once had a taxi driver who stopped by the side of the
Isn't
road, put his
that
little
what
prayer rug on the ground
that
and prayed, because they're just so dedicated. They really love God. I mean, it's the same God as Allah is our Heavenly Father, and it really is amazing how faithful they are.
Well, it's the God of Abraham, that's for
God of
sure.
Abraham, exactly.
So I guess, well, that's one name for the God of Abraham. The thing is, Linda, that Morocco, I think what fascinated me most is it's this convergence of three totally different cultures: the Islam culture, the Muslim culture, as you said, and also the African culture, because there
Right.
you are on the north of Africa, and there's just a lot of African influence, and the Berber culture, the mountain people, where we went the first night up into the Atlas Mountains, the ancient indigenous Berber people, and the three are merged in quite a remarkable way. They're not, I mean, they're not separate. They're
But they're totally different
yeah,
cultures.
totally different, but they come together in a completely peaceful way. In a way, it's like, this is a silly comparison because they're nothing alike in so many ways, but it's a little like Switzerland in that it's always been neutral. It's never been involved in wars, and it has a
Well,
king, and Mohammed the Sixth is the king now, and he's more than a figurehead. He appoints the prime minister and so on. And it's just so ancient, and there's just so much to see.
we spent the first night at an ancient kasbah, and pyramid, a huge pyramid, which is became a city.
A Casbah is a castle.
It's kind of a castle of a ruler. Anyway.
There's an old movie I still remember from my youth where the guy says, "Come with me to the Casbah."
Anyway, it was all candlelight. We stayed at a little hotel there, and it was all candlelight, candlelight
No,
dinner,
no light.
candlelight in the rooms, and the bathrooms. All of the doorways are keys.
They're like a keyhole.
So our son-in-law is huge. He's not fat at all. He's just a solid muscle,
Yeah,
huge,
his shoulders are too
and
broad to fit through a lot of the
couldn't get
doors
through the
or
bathroom
the
door.
alleyways. He has to turn sideways to go down the street.
Right,
That's
right.
how narrow some of the streets are.
That's right. But oh, they showed us such a lovely time up in the mountains, beautiful views, windy roads, crazy traffic everywhere. But we did when we got into the cities, we had drivers who took us where we wanted to go. We had so much fun shopping. This is more than you want to know. But anyway,
Well,
it
yeah,
was
they
a
want to know
beautiful
this.
country.
We watched Casablanca on
We went to
the
Casablanca, which was a 4-hour train ride, and there's really nothing to see there except
Well, it's a
the
big commercial. It's
amazing, amazing new mosque on
oh
reclaimed land. It is just gorgeous. They said, you can't leave
Assam's
without seeing it.
mosque.
Yeah.
And it's on
Anyway.
reclaimed land. They
Right.
build it out into the Atlantic Ocean on reclaimed land. It's quite amazing.
It's
And by the
absolutely.
way, Rick's Cafe is still there, the from the movie, from
Right,
Casablanca.
our driver took us there, and we didn't get out and go in and have a drink, but we went by. And then on the way home on the plane, we watched Casablanca, which we hadn't seen for years and years, and we totally recommend it. It's black and white. And speaking of them not being
Humphrey
involved
Bogart.
in the war, they were involved in the war in Casablanca.
Well, they weren't involved in it. The war just came
Well,
into it.
Hitler came. I mean,
Yeah,
all the Germans came and
exactly.
took over, and it was so scary for them. So,
But by the way, happy Thanksgiving to you all. We had a wonderful Thanksgiving. We hope you did. Merry Christmas coming upon us before we're ready, as usual. And it all kind of ties into what we want to talk about today. We're doing our How to Live the Second Half of Life course. We were doing our texts and our emails and so on to the course members from Morocco. And by the way, we'll be in Mexico for part of this month, and we'll be posting our class from there. Just wherever we go, we're working on how to live the second half of life, and we've been on how to live the second half of life emotionally for the month of November, and now we're shifting in December to how to live the second half of life socially as we go through these 7 months of classes and thoughts on how to live the second half of life. And more, Linda, we're learning as we go. I mean, we had some ideas, and that's why we wanted to do the class, but as we do it, we're learning about it and thinking about it and pondering about basically the difference between what we've started calling first half thinking and second half thinking. And half doesn't necessarily mean, the exact midpoint of your life. Like if you're going to be 90, you switch over at 45 to the second half. It usually happens later than that. It's a change in attitude. It's a change in paradigm. It's a paradigm shift to where we're thinking more about relationships than achievements. We're thinking more about how to slow down and how to be calm and peaceful and feel more than we did in the first half. And it's just a second half kind of thinking. For example, going back to the mental, how to live the second half mentally. We talked for the whole month and thought for the whole month about how to get past the first half thinking, where the goals always seem to be control, more ownership, more independence, CONI, as we call it, and shifting into a lighter, higher sort of a thing where we're substituting serendipity for control and stewardship for ownership and synergy for the whole idea of independence. And it's just been so much fun to explore all that. And so when we went into how to live the second half of life emotionally, I think some of you who are with us in that class or who are listening to this podcast thought, oh, well, emotionally, that'll be about, going to finding a better therapist and getting more control of your emotions and calming down and so on and so forth. But we approached it a very different way. We approached it by saying, no, what we're going to explore in how to live the second half emotionally is how to feel more, how to deepen our feelings, how to get away from the sort of ruts we get in where we just go from day to day and we're rushing around and we don't feel very much. The idea of really doing something in a way that made a difference in how much we could feel. And we did things like, read more poetry, try to be involved with more Sundays, observe the Sabbath day more, try harder to shift gears and go into a place where you feel more deeply on Sunday because you get out of the rut of the everyday and you slow down and so on. And now in December, we've shifted to how to live socially. And I think a lot of people in the class, and maybe some of you listen to the podcast, were thinking, oh, how to live socially, that'll be about, how to win friends and influence people, or how to, expand your Rolodex or your contact list, or how to get more friends on social media.
That's all in the past. That's all in
And
the
that's
past.
first half thinking.
Yeah, it
That's
certainly
first half
is.
thinking.
And I think we really do have to concentrate, though, on our relationships with other people. I have been in a book club now for, oh gosh, a lot of years, 30, 40 years. Anyway,
Decades.
we have just at the first week of December, we always meet. And it's such a beautiful experience because there were just a dozen of us sitting around a
Old
big
friend,
square table,
long-term friend.
old friends, which makes us old people. But wow, we just always go around and tell the highlight of our year or what we're thinking about at the moment, and it's rich and deep. And wow, it was just like taking a sauna. It was just covered with warmth and goodness because everyone had, they're just beautiful spirits, and it's really amazing to see. We have other book clubs that we belong to that we don't feel that close to, where they're stimulating and so on. But if
Well, they
you
haven't
can,
lasted that long.
right, exactly. And if you haven't done it, it's not too late to create a book club. I think socially, that is one of the best connections you can make because you've got an outside thing to talk about, a book that you all appreciate. And then the discussions are just so fascinating. It's not too late to create your own book club.
Or just a group of really close friends that meet together, like our
Right.
Inklings. We've had this group called Inklings. We'll talk a little more about that after the break, but friends that we've had for 50 years. And the idea, what I was trying to say earlier, was that instead of the first half thinking of social being more friends and expanding our contact list and being on social media and all that, it's more about what are the relationships that really matter? What are the ones that you treasure and that you need to put more effort into. And of course, many of them are with our family. And so let's take a little break. And when we come back, let's dive in, Linda, to the idea of how to live the second half of life socially in terms of focusing on the relationships that really count.
Okay, we'll be right back. Hang on. So we're back talking about the importance of relationships. Even though we're in the last quarter of our life, we've been in the last half for quite a while. No matter where you are in your
Well,
second
unless we
half.
live to be the 105 or so, then we're not quite in the
Right,
fourth quarter.
exactly. But You always want to be right, but it
No,
really is
I always want to be young.
accurate. Anyway, it really is an interesting time of life because some of us have moved. We definitely made a move a few years ago, and we've developed a whole new group of friends. We were just with them last night, a lot of them in our building because we have a condominium building. We still have a gathering place, and some of you do not have a big gathering place. You have to find gathering places with your kids, in your kids' homes or whatever. But it is just so important to think about how am I doing socially?
Yeah, and to think of it in a qualitative, not a quantitative sense. It's not
Right.
about
A
how
lot.
many relationships, it's about how deep those relationships are. And the way we're approaching it this month, just so you'll kind of have a preview of the month ahead of December, this first week we're focusing on relationships that we treasure and need to cultivate and work on and get and grow in within our family. So the first week, relationships with family. The second week, relationships with friends. So we'll do a deep dive into the second week of the month. And of course, it all ties into Christmas, and it's just a perfect month to talk
Right.
about relationships. Then the third week of the month, we're going to talk and think a lot about relationships with ourselves. That's the relationship we ignore too often, the relationship with ourselves. We'll explain that in a lot more detail in terms of what it means to us. And then the fourth week, corresponding with Christmas, we want to talk about relationships with God, relationships with the divine. And irrespective of what denomination or what faith you have or what your faith tradition is or whether you have any faith at all, whether you're just relating to the universe or to the bigger thing that we are a tiny, tiny part of. So,
Well, and part of that is going to involve somewhere in there talking about relationship with your spouse.
well, of course,
Because.
that's that third week, relationship with self, meaning the broader self of you and your spouse,
Okay.
which we like to call oneness. But some of our kids don't like that idea of oneness because it sounds like you're sort of swallowed up in each other and there's no more you.
Right.
And we're going to try to convince them and you that that's the best trade you will ever make, trading independence for interdependence
Right.
if you are a
And
married person.
many of you, if you're older, have lost a spouse and may not have a spouse right now. And so there are things that we can do that you can do to really improve that too, as you work with relationships with your children and with friends and so on.
And
There's a lot
so,
of ways to work.
Linda, we're gonna do the little deep dive right now on relationships with family, the most important relationships we have, of course. And we're speaking mainly of our children and our grandchildren, because relationship with your spouse is part of the relationship with self that we'll get into the third week. But I want to tell a quick incident. Linda had to miss a wonderful funeral. She was speaking of this book club that she had to be to because it was a once a year kind of a thing. But I went to a funeral of a really good friend of ours and someone who we've known for a lot of years. And one of the things that happened in the funeral, he'd had a stroke and he couldn't, he would had a massive stroke and all he could move was his left arm and his left hand. And one of his daughters told the story of the 12 days they had with him after the stroke, when all he could do was move his hand, and he kept making a circular motion with his left hand, with the palm down, and they couldn't figure out what he meant, and they kept trying to figure it out and ask him, and he'd squeeze the hand, and
He couldn't talk,
they
yeah.
couldn't get what it was. And finally, just before, I think the day before he passed, they understood that what he was doing is saying, gather, gather. He was moving his hand, like pulling people together, gather, gather. I want you as my family when I'm gone. I want you to gather. I want you to be together.
And I think probably that was because he had a really high-powered job. at Stanford. He was a professor there. And his family was kind of
And
a Salt
many
Lake, and
companies
he
and
was in
businesses.
California. He started at Blue with a friend, and he was just very, very busy his whole life.
And
A
maybe hadn't gathered
tremendous
as much
guy.
as he wished he had or
Yeah.
thought he should have. I think that's right. And I think what he was saying and what we're saying to you is that, there's two ways to think of family relationships, obviously. One is when we're all together, or lots of us are together, group, collective relationships, the family togetherness and so on. And then there's the individual relationships, one-on-one with each of your grandchildren or each of your children, and how special those individual relationships are. But he was saying, gather, 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 because I think we've all realized that proximity, and if you're the grandparent, you're the one that has to create that. If you can get your family together, and I know it's not always altogether pleasant. It's hard logistically to get people together. Sometimes it brings out tensions or individual problems between different members of the family. And some of us just say, oh my gosh, it's too much trouble. It's too much chaos. I don't want to do it. But whether it's a family reunion or whether it's a Sunday dinner that you have regularly with your family, or a camping trip you go on, or whatever ways you gather, don't underestimate the power of those, because the proximity, getting people together, cousins bonding with other cousins, uncles and aunts mentoring nephews and nieces, just all the things that go on in a gathering are so powerful for relationships, and they feed the individual relationships that go on within the family. And I think we all just have to sit down and strategize in our own situation, because every family's different. How are we going to gather? How, and don't say I'm going to do it online. Although of course that's good to have Zoom meetings with those that are far away, or to connect with them through FaceTime and so on. But physical gathering, it's sometimes expensive, it's sometimes chaotic, it's sometimes logistically hard, but in the long run, it's so important and so powerful.
Now, just so that you know that we are not perfect at this. We have just had a very funny experience, funny now that it's over, of trying to gather our children for a Christmas party.
Yeah.
And I know some of you have maybe children who don't like each other, don't get along, and so on. That is not our problem. But there are so many schedules and so many things to
So
work
many things
through.
going on. We got a date set for Boxing Day, the day after Christmas, when we'll get them all together, the kids and the parents and everything. But we were trying to do one just for our own kids, where they have to have babysitters for their kids, and they're all having different things. And we went the rounds on a WhatsApp group we have, and I think it ended up being, it was not positive, because everyone's like,
There was
well,
a
you're
little
thinking
bit
more
of
about
content.
this than that. Well, what about my, and we finally just like, okay, we'll just do it after the big party on the 26th. We had to compromise in a lot of ways, but I mean, in a way that makes the point better than I could have, Linda, or better than we could have just talking about it.
Yeah.
You it's not, you do it, you find a way, you figure it out,
Not
because
easy.
gathering is just so important.
Yeah, it really is. But wow, there's a lot of opinions about gathering and where and when and what about so and so, because he's going to feel left out if you do this, and if we don't do him, then do, you know, and it got hilarious yesterday. I mean, you get tense and intense, and then it gets beyond that. It just gets kind of funny that we have such a hard time getting our kids together. But it's not easy to gather, but
Well, another
it's
way to say that,
important.
if you want everything to be smooth and to never make any waves or have any problems, just don't do a gathering, right? Just, but if you're willing to take all of the good and the bad, and the good, the bad, and the ugly, get it, make it happen. And then shifting to the individual relationships with family, you've all heard us talk about these two things, but we keep coming back to the two things of of number one, having a frequent five facet review with your children about your grandchildren. We're gonna do one this coming Saturday while we're in Provo with one of our families. We're gonna sit down and just with the mom and the dad and go through each of their six kids. How's this one doing physically, emotionally, socially, spiritually, and mentally? And
And
how?
not that we are in charge of this.
No,
They are in
you're
charge of
asking.
this meeting.
Yeah.
They are going to tell us
We're the learners.
what
They're
their
telling
children
us.
are going through, and maybe some things on the way through the discussion of what we could do maybe to help.
Right. So that they're the stewardship of their children, but we're the supporters, the consultants, we're the cheerleaders. We want to be there. We want to supplement them. And the idea of talking about each of their kids and what they know about and what they're worried about, what we've observed, it's like this wonderful sort of personnel management meeting where we're focused on each of those kids.
Yeah.
And I just love it.
I love it too, and I think they really appreciate it. And we really need to catch up on several of our kids that we haven't done for a while. But it's really interesting because your initial reaction when you see a child that's struggling, you
Yeah.
know, your grandchild, is to, have you tried this, or why don't you do this, or you know. Sometimes kids are out of control, and you just don't want to give advice, you know, as
Yeah.
far as this is what you should do. This is what you should do, because we don't know what they should do. We just need to know the circumstances, and then we need to, if they ask, you know,
Right.
what do you think? What do you think we can do? It's so different than, oh, that child is so,
Yeah,
hard.
and the second half, you're not the manager, you're the consultant. You're
Right.
the one that asks the questions and tries to give support. The other one that we've talked about a lot on the show before, but we just believe in it more and more, is that you really can set relationship goals. And that means you can set specific goals for a one-on-one relationship with one grandchild or with one child within your family. And the
Now,
way
explain
you,
what you mean by that.
well, an achievement goal is, make this much money or sell this many products or, develop this company or whatever. And they're usually measured quantitatively. And that's what we used to do in our seminars. We'd say, put down your three top goals for the year, and then we'd collect them. Every one of them was about an achievement. There were never any goals about relationships. And the reason is because that's harder. I mean, how do you set a relationship goal for the, how do you, quantify? You want to be 50% perfect in this relationship? It just doesn't quantify.
Right.
And so what we've tried to teach ourselves and others is you set relationship goals by words, by writing a description of a relationship with a certain person, one child, one grandchild, in 3 years from now. What's my relationship with Bennett, who's now 14? I want to describe my relationship as Bennett's grandfather with him when he is 17. And you try to write down, and again, no one's going to read this but you, so it doesn't have to be some masterpiece of writing. What's my relationship with Bennett? He's now 17 years old, and we're sitting in a car. We're driving somewhere together. How do we talk? What do we talk about? How do we trust each other? How open are we? What does he tell me about? What do I ask him about? And you try to actually create that image of that relationship 3 years down the road, and it begins to
Be
produce
part of your,
results. It
yeah,
begins
part
to
of your
be part of your
subconscious.
subconscious.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's so many things you can do to develop relationships. It's just a matter of doing it, right? I mean, I'm just thinking, Bennett just got his first phone on his birthday last week, and I did send him a message on it, but I didn't send him another message like, how was your birthday? What, you know, what
Yeah,
happened? You
yeah.
know, there are just so many things we can do.
It's
It's just a
consciousness,
matter of
isn't it? It's
consciousness.
how conscious you are of each of these relationships and how prioritized you make them.
Right, exactly. Well, we hope we've given you something to think about. We've thought about some things that we needed to be doing too while we've been talking.
Yes.
And we just do appreciate your tuning in. We hope that you enjoyed this beautiful season.
And we'll continue every week this month to talk about relationships, how to live the second half of life socially in that beautiful context of relationships. So join us every week.
We'll see you next time
And
on Ayers on the Road.
Merry Christmas.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.